Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by The Pact. From MMA fighter Cody Garbrandt comes the inspirational memoir, The Pact, an in-depth look into the life of the brawler from his early days in a rough town in the central Appalachian region of Ohio to living his American dream of becoming a UFC fighter through the support of an unlikely friendship with a young fan with cancer. Experience the story about the power of friendship, commitment, and the will to thrive. Own your copy of The Pact from Cody Garbrandt, available everywhere books are sold now. And enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
What's up?
Bitch. It's me, Dave. I'm really excited about today's show. I sound tired, but that's only because since what day of the week was it? Monday. I've been taking victory laps for the Washington Capitals beating the Penguins, and I'm just exhausted. So that's why I sound like this.
And I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. To set the scene, folks, Lozo is seated with his legs spread akimbo and his hands on top of his head. Think about a scene in a movie where the rich villain gets oral sex from somebody, and he's like, he's like,
nice.
All right, now take care of this. This is like the position you're in.
It's like Pacino in The Devil's Advocate when the girl goes into the table at the restaurant. He's like, Keanu, look at this.
Congratulations, you're about to blow the devil. Oh, spoiler.
And you're in Puck Soup. We didn't say it last week.
Yeah, I like when people put the clock on it to see if we actually said it or when.
I remembered like 49 minutes in that we forgot, but I figured at that point it was too late. I remember you were talking and I was like, oh, we never actually... Did we actually?
There was a bit I did with Merrick once because we used to do the cold open on the show. Then we do the opening like jingle of the show.
Wait, like you guys would do like a really bad political sketch? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. We'd have Ben Stiller on as Michael Cohen. Yeah, anybody whoever is having sex with Colin Jost appears as Ivanka Trump. There one episode I remember we did the entire show. And then at the end of the show, I'm like, all right, let's start the show proper. And we played the opening, and it was a great bit that we only did once. And then other times, I think we just forgot to do it, much like when we forget to do You're in Puck Soup here.
You're in Puck Soup.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you are.
Home of
Dave Lozo.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The person who led the charge for the Washington Capitals.
Now,
did they mention me in the locker room after the game at all?
They all did.
Okay.
I
didn't see any quotes about it, but I assumed.
Mm-hmm.
It's off the record stuff, probably.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no. They said we were in the lose hole. And then we climbed out of it.
Like Nick Backstrom said, fuck this league of doctors who can't fix my hand.
Fuck these people who don't follow noted prognosticator Dave Lozo. I've been dreading this. Like, listen, I was insufferable last year when I picked the Predators over the Blackhawks because I was one of few. Many people picked the Capitals against the Penguins. You've been taking victory laps. I think you dedicated your other podcast to your victory.
I wouldn't say dedicated. I mean, they let me write the summary and headline, so I wrote the summary and headline for the podcast.
It's pretty amazing how the Capitals, next to their second round beat the Penguins championship banner, they have actually raised another one that said,
"Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave Lewis."
Really, really, the support is what got us through these two rounds.
They flew the W next to the W.
Yeah, well, like instead of raising an L, they're raising a DL. I'm Dave Lozo, Caps Monumental Network.
All right, so I know you might have mentioned it on the other podcast we made our picks, although the listeners, in fairness, might be confused because you did pick both sides of each series on your respective podcasts, if memory serves. So when you pick the Capitals,
boy, look at you trying to find poke holes in my genius.
I'm just saying that when you did this podcast,
this is like when you posted that screenshot from your ESPN thing where you were like, "I almost picked the Caps." Look,
yeah, no, oh no, I need to do that for every series. Yeah. It was basically a roundtable we did called "How the Caps Could Win." I'm like, oh, this is fucking great. We should do this for every series,
sure.
Because then I can go back and be like, look it, I found the blueprint for them. Clearly, they followed it.
And just like cap the screenshot right at the bottom where you can just see the pick like in bold, but you can't quite see what it is. What does that say? P 1997? Was that
it said probably caps.
Yeah, probably. Put your pens down and write caps.
I remember on the podcast you picked both. You said, oh, I've made one set of picks on biscuits.
That was for the first round.
And then I'm going to make – oh, so then the second round you made consistent picks.
Where once the Preds win tonight, I'll be 4-0 in the second round. Just undefeated. Breezing through.
It's pretty incredible. You know who else is 4-0 right now if the Preds win? My dad. And he knows fuck all about hockey. So I guess that's why the smart people like me are struggling.
That's what it is.
And you're doing so well.
Man, you've had 4 days to prepare for comebacks. And so far, all you got is, didn't you make two separate picks one round? And you're the same as my dad.
No, honey. I ain't preparing nothing for anything. I've been dreading this like a fucking trip to the dentist. Like, if the dentist had set up shop at the DMV and also... All my ex-girlfriends were there to point and laugh at my penis while I got a root canal in the DMV. That's how much I've been dreading this podcast to hear you gloat about this bullshit.
I will now take the victory lap.
He's actually running around the studio. He's actually he's walking and waving like the queen. Like the queen. He's high-fiving the parts of the studio that dull the noise. He's talking to my backpack and asking if it wants him to sign its breasts.
No time for interviews right now.
He just said he can't have any interviews to acoustic guitars in the corner.
I couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't have done it without stop it. Alex, go get ready for game one.
Yeah. Well, I'm appreciative that I got to see a glimpse of what happens every time you take a healthy shit at home. That's good.
That was nice. Well, I mean, you do watch the Jets every Sunday, so you know what that's like.
It's watching a very healthy shit at home. So why did you think it would be different this time, besides blind luck?
Blind luck. Greg, let me tell you a little thing about heart
and
the will to win.
Yes. Okay. I'm dying to hear this.
That had nothing to do with it. Let me tell you about a man named Braden Holtby, Greg. A man who, for reasons unbeknownst to anyone, was running to the ground as the Caps sprinted towards President's trophies. And then this year,
yes,
he poops his pants for a little bit, and the Caps are like, you know what? You know what we got to do? Phil Grubauer.
Ah.
And that bad decision led to a good decision, which was to put Holtby back in.
That was
for
it was a really good decision. One might say it should have been the decision all along to play him.
However,
yes,
if they did play him in game one, maybe it doesn't go the same way. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different. So that bad mistake, it's sort of like in Carolina where they're just going to make a bunch of mistakes off the bat and hope that it doesn't matter.
Oh, we'll get to that later.
The Caps just said, hey, let's accidentally rest Holtby during the regular season. So he's ready for the postseason. So he's not dead in the second round. And in the game where they had to basically have Braden Holtby win it for them, he did. And look, I feel like some people saw my genius coming, so they jumped on the bandwagon. I told them to. The bandwagon was
so here. You're saying that no one had picked the Capitals until they saw you as sort of the Moses of good thinking, and you led them to the promised land.
I led them out of a land of French fries on salads.
Yes, French fries on salads.
And overrated pizzas or overrated sandwiches. And I said, here, come with me to the third round, where I promptly said, okay, this is as far as I go. I'm going to go get on that Tampa Nashville bus over there because that's really the bus that I'm into. So, everyone, I appreciate you coming along for the ride. We sung songs, it was great. Yeah, if you can help Nick Backstrom onto the bus, you know, he can't grip the railing. Make sure he doesn't fall.
It. Yeah. Now listen, I'll say this about the
And the Penguins were just worn down. That too. That was part of it.
The Penguins were worn down. I would say that some of them were dealing with injuries that we'll talk about that later, may or may not have been disclosed.
Hey, we can't reveal injuries in the offseason. What if Phil Kessel goes to the grocery store and someone hits him with a shopping cart and exacerbates the injury?
Yeah, that sounds like more of an Eric Johnson injury.
I still want to know how he really got hurt.
Yeah, right.
I love those injuries.
Woo, look at me. I'm Mad Max. Whoa, shit.
Hey, I'm Jeff Kent. I'm just cleaning my truck. That's what happened.
So I thought they had a chance to win for a couple reasons.
Who, the Caps?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were all of the players that had been there for previous playoff disappointments and the fact, as had been voiced by a couple of guys in the locker room, because it made a lot of sense to me when you start talking to this team and kind of getting in their heads a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
No one expected them to do shit this year.
Exactly. That's part of it, too.
Yeah, and that's part of it. Like, the minute, like as has been a mantra on this very podcast for quite a long time, Dave Lozo, when you lower expectations to their lowest point, what happens?
You can never be disappointed.
You can never be disappointed.
You can never feel the pressure of expectations if you don't have them.
So I would proffer, in my prognostication, in my analysis of the situation, the best thing to ever happen to the Washington Capitals is Kevin Shattenkirk being horrible in the playoffs. Because you went all, if he had been good, maybe you win last year, but you didn't. And you look back on the trade, and it was their moment of saying, we took our best shot after a three-year build, and we fell short, and now we're fucked, but whatever. We're going to play a bunch of kids and see what happens.
But
and
really,
it was at that moment when they raised the white flag.
It wasn't a bunch of real, it really wasn't a bunch of kids. Like, Devontae Smith-Pelly's not 22.
Well, no, it's Jacob Arana. It's
for a period.
Chandler Stevenson
Chandler
or whatever.
Stevenson. Come on.
This week on Days of Our Lives, can the family figure out a way to stop Chandler Stevenson scheming? Wait, who? Is that a guy? That's not a real name.
Keonti, you have to marry one of these two men. Chandler Stevenson or Mackenzie Blackwood.
Mother, I have something to tell you.
Oh, it might. It's Nathan Walker.
Wait.
Mother, I have something to tell you. I'm already betrothed to Barclay Goodrow.
Nathan Walker.
I go down under. That's why all the lasses on this show like me.
There's really nothing better in life than Evgeny Kuznetsov after the game being like,
so, hey, Kuzi, what did you think of the play of Nathan Walker in this game?
Kuzi.
He is I lack the words. He is a motherfucker.
I know.
And, like, I found out afterwards, by the way, twice in one series being able to quote a Capitol saying fuck is pretty great.
Well, see, he said this time. As we all know.
Yeah, as you know. It's a,
he I made
heard,
it up.
I've heard people on the download give me shit for that thing. Like it was somehow off the record to hear a guy bellowing fuck this league within earshot of the media section right by the locker room.
Were all these people someone who worked for rights holders and teams like who never want to upset the apple cart? God forbid.
But like the greatest thing about it is I found out afterwards from a Caps reporter, like I'm like, yeah, did you see that Nathan Walker quote from Kuznetsov? They're like, yeah, they've had to tell him like six times to stop saying motherfucker in interviews.
Ovechkin was cursing too. They were like, what were you thinking when Kuznetsov was off on the breakaway? He was like, hope he fucking scores.
Yeah.
Scores.
Right.
Curse.
Could you just imagine like being a cat?
Kuzi, could you take us through the tying goal here in game 61 of the regular season? Oh, motherfucker.
It's like Sam Jackson in Russian.
I'm going to score these motherfucking goals on this motherfucking team.
Also, this just lends more credence to the Backstrom things. Apparently, the Caps can't stop fucking saying fuck.
Yeah.
So they must like the podcast.
They speak the Queen's English. Yeah, I think it's all the younger players, especially the ones that played in game 6 because they didn't know any better. Nathan Walker included that he assisted on a pretty important goal in that game. And then like, again, like we talked about this before with Ovechkin, we're both defenders of Ovi. We're both guys that have stood up to the forces of the Canadian media who are like,
we're heroes really.
You're like, yeah, he's a liability, eh? I assume what they say.
Yeah. We're like Cap and Bucky with just less sexual attention.
Right. Exactly. Well, I don't know. I mean, the way you're sitting again.
I mean, I'm feeling it today.
So, and the microphone is placed strategically right there.
Right under the chin.
Mm-hmm, right under the chin.
I just want to lean.
I meant the microphone stand is phallically placed between your legs. And the microphone itself is placed under your chin.
Yeah. People have commented that my penis is very much like a microphone stand and that it's angular and shaped weird.
Your penis is a motherfucker. So, well.
Yes, they deserve to score, and I hope they burn in hell.
Right, so, we've been defenders of Ovechkin in the postseason for a long time, but I've never seen him do important shit like this before. Like, his numbers are great, as I've often said, since 2008, for guys that have played at least 60 games in the postseason, no one has a higher goals per game average than Alex Ovechkin, noted playoff choker. Now, he's never done this shit, though. There's never been a series where you look back on their victory and you can point to three game-winning goals, especially, obviously, against the Penguins.
Well, three.
In which he had a hand to them.
That's a high bar to have.
Scored one
game-winner.
Scored
game-winner and 75% of wins. That's a lot.
Assisted on two game-winners.
I see, like, if I was prepared for this, I go back and look and see. Because I remember he had some really good Rangers series where just his teammates blew, I'll say goat. I don't know. I was going to say they blew ass, but that made no sense.
Yeah, they blew ass.
How do you blow an ass?
So I think he was present and accounted for in this series in ways that he wasn't previously.
Sure.
And so that's a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure.
And now on the other side of the equation, the Penguins were tired.
Penguins have played four extra months Well, let's see. The Caps went to the second round both times, so that's a month of hockey, while the Penguins have played 4 months of hockey. That's three extra months of hockey in 2 years span. You're going to get worn down.
Then you look around. Like, the Penguins have always been a team that could kind of figure shit out, right? So then you look around this lineup, and you're like, okay, how do we lose this game? Oh, Chris Letang fucked up. How do we lose this game? Oh, Chris Letang fucked up again. Well, like, uh-oh.
They got to trade him. He's a dog.
But hey, what happened? Why didn't we turn this thing around? I mean, other guys make mistakes. Yeah, Matt Murray wasn't good. Like, uh-oh, wait, those are two guys you can usually depend on. Well, after those guys, I mean, like, wasn't there someone to lift our spirits? Yeah, Nick Bonino's in Nashville, Matt Collins in Minnesota, Chris Kunitz was in Tampa Bay.
Malkin missed 33% of the game with an injury.
And so, like, you start looking around, you realize, oh, shit, wait, this is not the same cut of meat that we've seen sizzled up in the last few years.
I don't necessarily think they lost because Matt Collin and Nick Bonino weren't there.
I think it all adds up. When you're skating around looking for a hero, and you're looking at Chad Ruweedle to do something instead of, you know, someone else.
Yeah, but I mean, Derek Brassard didn't really do anything.
Yeah, precisely. That's my point. They replaced working parts with parts that didn't work as well.
Well, all the parts they had, too, weren't working, like Phil Kessel. There's a million guys that weren't doing anything.
I know.
Nick Bonino is not the reason why the Penguins would have won.
I think it's part of the equation.
Chris Letang, I think, playing with like his hand sliced. Remember that Nick Bonino? Chris Letang had his hand sliced open, and he took off his glove, and he had just like this gigantic gash on his hand. Then he put the glove back on, and everyone's like, can't figure out what's wrong with Chris Letang. Maybe he has a 10-foot hole in his hand.
But you go to overtime, and you got some of those guys that aren't there. Like your Chris Kunitz scoring his one goal for the playoffs, and it happens to be in that playoff overtime, that kind of shit.
Oh,
Chris Kunitz. It all adds up, man.
They still had the problem was that I just don't necessarily think it was the fact that they didn't have Chris Kunitz, Nick Bonino, and Matt Collin. I think it was because they had Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang just not playing well.
No, Crosby played well except for game six.
Oh, that's true. Crosby and Gensel.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Gensel and Crosby.
Oh, by the way, you talk about disappearing acts.
Apologies.
Guess what happened in game five? The Capitals started hitting the shit out of Jake Gensel. Guess what happened in five and six? He did not score.
Oh.
No. No.
He didn't stop scoring because he got hit.
This is observational and analytical.
They beat
the shit out of Gensel, and he didn't put up a point in the last two games of the series.
But he had 20 points in 10 games.
Yep.
He was. So you're telling me if they hadn't stopped checking him, he would have been a 2 points per game guy the entire postseason?
I'm saying they targeted him, and I'm saying that he got punched in the mouth and he didn't respond because he looks like a little cherub.
Oh, my God.
He looks like Angel from X-3, X-Men, The Last Stand. But he looks like Ben Foster from that. Remember?
Oh, right. Oh, not the Angel Wing guy in the newer one.
Not the Angel Wing guy from X-Men Apocalypse.
That was Ben Foster.
That was Ben Foster. Like, noted thespian Ben Foster. Like, Ben Foster is fucking a great actor. Like, put him in a Western. Man, that guy's great. Put him in X-Men The Last Stand as Angel. He's horrible.
Well, because somebody tweeted this once. I forget the exact tweet, but it was like, you know a movie's going to be fucked up when Ben Foster appears on screen. Like, you know shit's going to go bad.
Yeah.
Because he's like the partner in the crime that fucks you over.
Right.
He's the crazy brother that tries to kill people. Mm-hmm. Every movie he's in.
Yeah.
But yeah, he
can't
like,
be trusted.
He was like sad that his dad didn't love him in the X-Men movie, right?
Yeah. Because he tried to cut off his angel wings. But then he learned to be himself while Magneto was attacking Alcatraz, or whatever.
Well, was he attacking Alcatraz or the Golden Gate? Oh, the Golden Gate Bridge.
He used the Golden Gate Bridge,
even though
it was daytime, and then it went to Alcatraz, and it was nighttime for some reason.
But like, they were trying
to get the little boy out who can take away. They were using the little boy's blood to create the anti-mutant serum.
I remember
so
that.
That's when they unleashed the Juggernaut on Alcatraz.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! That fucking guy.
And the only buddy who could stop the Juggernaut was, of course, Juno.
Right.
This movie was fantastic.
This was the third one in the original ones, right? That's the one where Hugh Jackman kills Famke Janssen at the end?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
That's right. Yeah. And she kills James Marsden. She kills Cyclops earlier in the movie.
Does she? I don't remember that.
And yeah, she like Cyclops knows that Jean Grey's alive. And so he goes to the lake where she disappeared, and she's all there, and she's all phoenixed out. And, like, she doesn't know what her powers do. She disintegrates the captain of the X-Men.
I don't remember that.
In the movie. Yeah.
I remember when, like, Picard dies, or whatever his name is.
You mean Professor Xavier?
I'm so out of it, man. Like, I took a Claritin this morning, and I'm usually not this out of it. And, like, I'm just so zonked, man. These fucking time of year.
Tell me about life with allergies. So I don't know what it's like. I've developed a slight allergy maybe in the spring now where my voice gets scratchy for like a week. But when I see you, you look your eyes look puffy.
Yeah.
Why has it always been like this? Have you been like this since you were a kid?
I don't really remember. I was telling him before we started, like when I was a kid, I got allergy shots because I played baseball.
Why don't you get allergy shots now?
Because they didn't really do anything. I don't remember them ever actually
working. Oh, so the power was inside of you all the time?
Yeah, the power to not have anything ever happen, apparently. It's been inside of me my entire life. It's like you wake up in the morning.
Wake up in the morning and you start sneezing.
And you know how bad it's going to be instantly by how soon you sneeze after you wake up. Like if I wake up and 4 minutes later I sneeze three times, I'm like,
oh, man. I'm the same way with scotch. Like if I have a glass of scotch within 4 minutes of waking up, I know it's going to be a pretty long day.
It's just my right eye gets itchy. My left eye is never itchy. My right eye is itchy. A lot of sneezing.
That's obviously a tribute to Lisa Lopes from TLC.
Lisa Loeb?
Yeah. No, Lopes, left
you
eye.
You say...
I saw Lisa Loeb at Lilith Fair. Did I ever tell you I went to Lilith Fair when I was in college?
I can totally see that.
I was dating a girl who was into Sarah McLachlan. And
you were just like, man, she's so great. Like, she really speaks to me as a man. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I know most men are like that, but I am. Right?
I remember being there and being like, are they going to plug in any of these guitars?
You were listening to Melissa Etheridge's Come to My Window, and you were like, someday that's going to be an Applebee's jingle.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And it was the worst part about Lilith Fair was that it was like, there was like a whole, remember in like the 90s when, remember the 90s?
Remember the 90s?
Only a 90s kid will remember this thing about Lilith Fair. So there was an entire like subsection of female single female artists, shut the fuck
Just
up.
Just put the adjectives anywhere you want. It's fine.
Female singers. Who were all sort of born from the Alanis Jagged Little Pill neutron bomb that went off in music. Mm-hmm. So you had like Tracy Bonham doing Mother Mother. You had an artist named Poe. You had your Meredith. I'm a bitch. I'm a mother.
I'm a bird.
Yeah. And a bird. You had all these like one hit wonders. So I imagine it was like being in the 60s back when like every band in existence had one song on the radio and all had to do with like funky dancing. Now it's time to do the Flamingo Octopus. Joey and the Driftwoods doing Flamingo Octopus.
Flamingo Octopus with my girl.
You put your leg in the air. You take her hand in 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 her hand. And now you're doing Flamingo Octopus.
And now you're squirting ink in her face. Flamingo Octopus.
So there's like a, you know, for every Lisa Loeb or Jewel at the thing, there would be like a one hit wonder who would be like, you know, and of course like, you know, Meredith Brooks' Bitch is the last song she sings, so you have to sit through six other Meredith Brooks songs that you will never get anywhere. Like, the radio runs in the opposite direction when someone comes to the radio with that song. And so that was the problem with Lilith Fair. And maybe it's the problem with every festival. Like, there's always going to be bands on there that have, like, the one song. Have you ever been in a concert where the band played their one song to start their set and to finish their set? Because that's what Europe used to do with the Final Countdown. Europe would play...
Like the main show or the opening act?
No. Europe, when they would play a show, would open with the Final Countdown, and then the last encore would be the Final Countdown.
I kind of respect that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right?
Play Freebird. I'll do it twice.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
People like, want to hear it.
Freebird! Yeah, we're going to play it every single time you say that. How about that?
It's like the band at the end of Step Brothers when they only play the Billy Joel from the 80s. Like, it's like the opposite of that, where they just play the good Joel, the Joel you want to hear. I can respect that.
You can respect that?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Like, let's say we came out to do Puck Soup somewhere, like a live show.
Oh, a live show like in Dallas coming up at some point?
Oh, these fucking people on Twitter, no help.
So we asked people whether we should do Puck Soup on Thursday or Saturday in Dallas during the draft. And literally they all said,
even Steven, right down the middle.
And then one guy's like, do it Friday. We're like, we're at the fucking draft on Friday. That's the whole point.
I don't know why John Tortorella did his voice when he did that.
Do it Friday. Yeah. Hit the draft with your shoe.
I don't know what to do with that. Because like both ideas seem good in their own ways.
Yeah. Now wait, so you're saying if we did a Puck Soup live show, how would it be like a one-hit wonder?
Oh, like no. Like instead of us being like, you know, hey, come on out and do the hits. Do some of those. Do the Patrick Laine, Stan Fisher voices. Instead we were like, actually, we want to try something new. That's all we're going to do here. All new stuff. This is like a test kitchen for podcasting.
See, now you're getting into that other part where it's like when you're at like the, like I think of this all the time when I was at, I'd go to the Irish Channel in D.C.
Oh, the Irish Channel.
And after like a Caps game. And basically, it's just somebody there all the time playing Van Morrison covers. Like, that's all you want. It's right. Just Van Morrison covers in the pub. That's all you want. And then all of a sudden, he gets done with Moondance for the fifth time. And it's like, all right. This is an original composition. You're like, come on, man. No one's paying you for an original composition.
Oh, my girl, Charlotte O'Grady, left me, and I wrote this tune. Oh, no. No.
This one goes out to Mary Potatoes.
Oh, Mary Potatoes. Yeah, right. Like, imagine we do a podcast, and people are like, do Mary Potatoes. Or we're like, actually, we have a new character. It's called Irene Green Beans. What? I don't want to hear that. What is that? Do Mary Potatoes.
Do
no.
Do the Rich Galoff bit about Winnipeg. Actually, how about I do the bit about responsible gun ownership? Really do this thing right. You're paying for value. Here's my value. Speaking of value,
yeah,
the best
go.
Way to find value when buying tickets for concerts or sporting events is SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be very complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or you need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats, the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. Dave and I both have the SeatGeek app on our phone. As we've talked about many times, this summer will be filled with baseball games. Those baseball games will have tickets. They'll be purchased through SeatGeek. Why? Because it is the best way to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, you can instantly find seats.
Taps.
And the best thing about SeatGeek is it's designed to make your ticket buying experience a bit easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And you get the most bang for your buck because they grade each ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all,
with confidence.
Our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today under the promo code S-O-U-P, that spells soup. That's promo code soup for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You know, remember that time I read that ad and I screwed up the percent? Like, it was supposed to be like money off, but I said the percent instead or something.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what it was for, but I was thinking about that the other day because I was talking to somebody that I knew back in Jersey. We worked at Great Adventure together. I worked at Great Adventure a little bit one summer during college in their like communications department. Mm-hmm. But I also worked in the guest relations department at Great Adventure. Six Flags, for those that don't know. And
dun, 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 dun.
And I remember they so something happened where it was like horrible thunderstorms or some shit.
Did there lightning?
Lightning and the thunder. And I was working guest relations, and they're like, hey, can you make the announcement that people have to, you know, head out of the park, unfortunately, because of this horrible storm? I'm like, sure. So I'm like, I get on the mic. I'm, it's my mic feedback noise. I'm like, attention guests. Because of impending inclement weather, everybody unfortunately has to vacate the park or find a safe area or whatever. And then I go, it's not on the script. I just go, and we'll try to, you know, we'll try to take care of things for you. Make it worth your while. We'll take care of you.
Like a manager ran over.
Yeah, right. That's
totally it. Dove for the microphone.
So I was just like, I remember it specifically. She came over and she slammed.
She hit you physically?
She slammed her hand on the... No, I wouldn't be doing this fucking podcast if someone punched me in the face while working at Great Adventure. She slammed her hand on the desk next to me, and she goes, what did you do? And, like, we had about 25 people that came over to the guest relations booth that, I guess, realized that they could leverage this.
Yeah.
And we had people coming up and being like, I heard you say something about making it right for us or whatever. What are you going to do? And then they had to give them like free tickets to some other another part of the summer. I lost the money. It reminded me of that ad read because I'm like, imagine like someone calls up fucking ZipRecruiter or whatever, and they're like, guy on Puck Soup said I can get shit for free for 30% off.
By the way, that's how people talk in Jersey. If you think he's doing a fake Jersey accent, that's how people
South Jersey
talk. Like that's not like a Rebels or Rise Again voice.
Patch, Geno's, and Great Adventure tickets. That's all we care about.
Oh, I didn't tell you the story when I went to my eye doctor on Monday. I never told you.
You didn't?
it's kind of hockey-ish. It's a weird sort of hockey coincidence.
Yeah,
story.
Tell me the story because you mentioned it before. Yeah.
So for the first time in 5 years, I'm like, I got to go see an eye doctor. I'm kind of overdue for a checkup. I go there. It's fine. We get done. And it's this older gentleman out in the suburbs of Jersey. And he's doing the thing at the end where he's looking into my eyes with that light stick or whatever. Looks in both eyes, wheels back over to like my chart. He goes, you look at a computer a lot? I'm like, yeah, I'm a writer. So I'm kind of basically looking at my computer and my phone all day. He's like, that's probably why they're dry. He's like, oh, what do you write? And I'm like, sports, but it's mostly hockey. And the second I say hockey, he just drops the pen and turns back around. He's like, hockey, really? And I'm like, oh, now I got to talk hockey. Shit. Always lie. Oh, I write about...
high lie.
I write about the death penalty and abortion. Right. You know, just I don't want to talk about it. But like, he was super excited. It was like Tom Cavanaugh face, where he was super excited to talk hockey with somebody, right?
Yeah, find an outlet for it, yeah.
So apparently... He goes, so what do you write about? I'm like, oh, this, that, or a thing. He's like, just says this to me. Doesn't even say a last name. He goes, you know, Marty's one of my patients.
Oh.
I'm like, instantly we know it's Marty Brodeur. And I'm like, oh, that's great. He's like, yeah, he brings all of his kids in here, blah, 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 blah. And then he's trying to remember the name of the other son. And I can't either because my phone's turned off because I'm in the doctor's office because I follow the instructions. And it's Anthony and, you know the other one?
No.
Jeremy,
okay.
And he's
I know Antony. Good, Antony got drafted.
Anthony,
as a favor.
Anthony followed me on Twitter until I made fun of his dad too much, and then he followed me, which is fair. So he's trying to remember the name of the other son, and he's like, hold on, I'm going to call my friend, who's also an eye doctor, who is engaged to Melanie, who is Marty Brodeur's
ex-wife, yeah.
If you're too young to remember, whenever Marty Brodeur made a save in the playoffs in the 90s, Fox would then show a replay of the save and then show his wife in the stands.
Right.
And as you probably know, Marty and Melanie got divorced after Marty kind of fooled around with Melanie's brother's wife.
Right.
That's the sister-in-law.
Which then began one of the single greatest bits in the history of all sports, and especially Philadelphia sports, Flyers fans chanting Uncle Daddy.
Uncle Daddy.
Ecuador.
Right. It's a great world we live in.
Listen, I don't like when things get personal too much in sports, right. But goddamn, that's the best chant of all.
But this is actually a good positive story about that, because not only is Marty still married to whoever that is, my eye doctor calls another eye doctor to find out the name of this kid. And the reason he can do it is because that other doctor has been engaged to Melanie for like 5.5 years. So like, he's on the phone and I can hear him through the phone. He's like, Jeremy plays for the Sharks minor league system. I can hear the whole conversation. He still hangs up and goes, well, his name is Jeremy. Yeah, I heard that. But it turns out that that doctor used to be neighbors with Marty and Melanie. And so after they got divorced, they got together, and they've been engaged for like almost 5.5 years, and now they can officially get married because they couldn't get married all that time because of like alimony, child support stuff.
Do you want to come in and just talk about it? You need a shoulder to cry on, that kind of thing.
I don't know how or when, mm-hmm. But the moral of the story is that everyone's happy.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
I'm a doctor. I'm here to take care of you.
You have sad eyes. That's a medical diagnosis. I mean, you gotta use whatever you have, man. I don't mind it at all. But yeah, so like
I could do something to take care of those tears. I'm an eye doctor.
I can wipe away those tears with love. So yeah, so like they couldn't get married for a long time, and now they can.
So that means when they have their vows, she has to say some shit like, "And he helped me see love again."
Their first date, he took her to go see that Val Kilmer movie with Mira Sorvino. What's it called again? At First Sight? Love at First Sight? Mm-hmm. Something like that? Yeah. And now they're in love.
That means their invitations are going to be fucking eye charts. These poor people that know this couple is the worst.
Fuck. I go out to the Jersey suburbs like once every 3 years, and I meet a guy who knows Marty Brodeur's ex-wife's new fiancé. What a world.
Yeah.
New Jersey and Canada. We're hockey hotbeds.
There it is. It's the biggest little world in the world. Little town in the world. It's a little state in the world. Lightning and Caps, we're both picking the Lightning. Why?
Why? We have to explain that one?
That's well, they are the Miracle Caps. Did you see my tweet before? Here, I'll spell it out for you.
Okay, tell me some tweets.
There is a path to the championship that the Capitals could be on.
Oh, yeah.
The one
where you keep ignoring the Winnipeg Jets.
They beat their tormentor, John Tortorella. They beat their tormentors, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They could beat Chris Kunitz in this round and all of the ex-Rangers that used to beat them. Mm-hmm. And then in the final, they could beat not only George McPhee, who's like the big bad, but also Marc-Andre Fleury, who's like his Darth Maul in the situation where he's the last. It's like a revenge movie where you have to take out everybody in the. It's like the Punisher. It's like you have to take out everybody in the crime syndicate who killed your family, and but Fleury's the last guy. Like right. Fleury's the guy over. He's living in Austria or some shit, and you can just track him down and you take care of him, and now you've gotten revenge.
Just giving no chance to the Jets, none.
So you think that now we
none.
All right, before we get to the Jets,
none. Disrespecting Canada. Good for you.
Tampa over Washington because of depth.
They're just way better.
They're just way better.
They're just way better.
But like what about the tenacious Caps heart that we saw on
Braden Holtby is the only chance. If Braden Holtby goes nuts for 2 weeks, they can beat them. That's it. That's the only out they have. Especially if Nick Backstrom can't play. Like they're screwed.
I just think the situation is that they lucked out and against the Penguins because the Penguins depth was ripped open and exposed because when Broussard's not doing anything and Kessel's not doing anything, you know, the Sid Gensel line can only do so much, and that Malkin line never really clicked. I mean, because he worked his way back from that injury.
Yeah.
And yeah, Brian Rust, who, by the way, something that Press Box rightfully described as the next Michael Grabner, all speed, no finish.
You know what? That's true, but I definitely remember tweeting that, and then like he scored on his next like 7 breakaways, and I had to hear about it after every single breakaway goal. I think he has a higher percentage of scoring on breakaways than Michael Grabner, but I see the point.
When the fourth line is the only line worth a damn for the Penguins, you know they're fucked. So
yeah, Tampa's going to run them over.
Tampa's way too deep, and they've got home ice, and the Vasilevskiy's acquitted himself quite well.
Yeah, he's gotten the rest now for like 5-6 days, so you have to worry about tired Vasilevskiy.
5 games apiece in those two series.
But like Holtby, man, if Holtby plays the way he did in Game 6, if the Caps are like, that's what's going to suck about the series, is the Caps are going to play that dog shit hockey they played in Game 6, because that's the only way they can win without Backstrom.
Did we talk about licking? I can't remember when we did the last
if
show.
You're ready for us to take it to the next level.
It's the way that you said legs akimbo.
I mean,
I forget if licking was part of the last show or not with him. We did it Friday.
I think we.
It should have been right. Yeah, it had to have been. Where they were gonna talk to him.
When did he tongue down Ryan Callahan again?
No, we had to have talked about licking. It's impossible that we didn't.
I think we didn't.
What are your thoughts on licking?
I don't think you should do it unless somebody else wants you to lick them. That's a pretty simple pop. Here's the thing about unwritten rules.
Yeah.
Sometimes the rules are written down in society already, and therefore you don't need to write them down a second time. So when it's like, oh, he's just trying to get under their skin. Well, you know, you can talk shit. You can do the little glove face wash thing.
The thing I didn't like about it was that people started to bring up like, is this sexual harassment? And I'm like, okay.
Wait, was that one of the things too?
That was one of the things that was brought up.
Who brought no? At, no one did.
Fucking look it up.
You saw one person.
There were people on Twitter that were like, "Could this be categorized as sexual harassment?" And I said to myself, "You know, it could totally be that. Also, hitting another guy in the face with your stick could be classified as assault. Any number of things that are happening in labor negotiations with these players could be considered fucking highway robbery and a violation of union rules. Like, there's a billion things about hockey that could be considered to be violations of real world rules. Don't go down that path.
Yeah, but like, that wasn't sexual harassment. That's just...
Let me give voice to that for a second. If this was a Jiffy Lube and not the NHL and some guy came up to another guy and licked him in the face, what do you think it's going to be? Sexual harassment?
No. Sexual harassment has to involve like a power structure that you're taking advantage of, as opposed to like just a dude trying to be
Marchand's a first line guy, Callahan's a fourth line guy.
What if he just ran his hand over his tongue and then put his hand on your face? That's all he's doing. He's not being there's nothing sexual about what he's
licking
doing.
Licking can be termed sexual.
I mean, oh, it could be, sure. Yeah. So could you know,
listen, not to prosecute this case, but
Your Honor,
please exhibit C here. The defendant clearly saying after licking Leo Komarov of the Toronto Maple Leafs, quote, "I don't know, maybe he's sweet on me." Like I'm not going to give voice to the idea this is sexual harassment, but he played the gay panic card after the Komarov thing, and it really sat the wrong way with me when he did that. It was some old school fucking wrestling heel gold dust bullshit.
Gold dust.
Yeah, that he was pulling. I mean, he was pulling that. He was doing the licking the guy and then being like, I don't know, maybe he likes me or something.
You think like he was trying to bait the other person into saying a homophobic type thing?
Did a licking thing and was just like, this is really gross and I don't know why you're doing it. But afterwards he was just like, I don't know, maybe he's sweet on me or whatever. I'm just like, oh, it's kind of fucked up.
Oh, I don't know he said that.
Yeah, he did. He said that about Komarov. He didn't say that about Callahan, but he said that he bought that up with Komarov.
I thought his whole deal with the Komarov thing was he was just pretending like it never happened. Like he was just like, maybe I did, maybe I don't know.
Yeah,
I
didn't say that, but he was pretending that he didn't lick him. He acknowledged that maybe it was a nuzzle or a cuddle.
What the hell's wrong with him? Something's... All right. Oh, yeah, we did talk about that. Because I remember saying, like, I think something is off with him a little bit. I think we talked about it, and then Callahan happened. You know what? You talk. I'm going to...
No, I think we didn't talk about the Callahan thing, but we talked about the Komarov
thing. Yeah, I don't think the Callahan thing had happened when we talked Friday.
Right, because I was writing licking stories during the derby. So that was Sunday. Derby. So the licking happened probably Saturday. Yeah, we didn't talk about the Callahan thing. Sorry, everybody. Your boy's been on the road a lot, and Lozo's...
There's a lot of licking going on.
A lot of licking going on.
Track of.
Trying to figure out exactly what we talk about this dumb podcast.
Who's licking who?
It's entirely possible, by the way, that we've talked about other players licking each other, but it's never really happened. Like, it's just been some fanciful bit that we did, so it gets very confusing on this podcast.
The fucking fanfic gets taken into reality. It kind of blows up my entire business. wait,
Taves licks Sharp.
Wait, what were we talking about?
Tampa. It's Washington. Gross. No. The Marchand thing is gross. We can agree it's gross.
It's just gross.
Hilarious. Like Elliot and I reported the league was going to give them a warning because we were both told the league was going to give them a warning. How that didn't happen? Who's to say?
My theory is that they did. He ignored it. He did it again, so they had to pretend like they didn't give it to him.
If they actually did warn him, then he would have gotten fined this time. But they didn't. Like there's been some breakdown in the communication. Okay,
something felt like the Mets lineup card. Something.
Yeah, they batted out of order. But I do believe that like they warned him this time, and they said, "Do it again, and you're fucked." And although, like I said, I was talking to a reporter in Washington, I'm like, "What are the chances that when Colin Campbell sits down with Brad Marchand and has the conversation about stopping the licking of other guys, what is the probability at some point during this conversation, Colin Campbell goes, plus it's kind of fruity, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
It's 100%.
I can totally see him.
101%.
Like, he's gonna say that the same way it would embarrass John Scott's family, licking would embarrass Brad Marchand's
You really
family.
Want to skate around looking like a gay?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
1,000%.
I could 100%. Even if he doesn't believe it, he would use that in a way to try to shame Brad Marchand. And I hope if he does, no, you know why he won't do it? He won't do it because he knows Brad Marchand would tell everybody that he did it. That's why he won't do it. John Scott ratted him out. He knows that if he does that again, I'm like, yeah. Now I say he's thinking it, but he won't do it.
And that's why, Brad, we were thinking maybe don't be doing that anymore. You know, it'd be unsportsmanlike conduct. Plus, you look like a fancy boy.
I like how he's Smithers. That's
Smithers.
Mr. Burns.
Now, let's change the subject. Are the referees still calling penalties on my son?
These goalie coaches in practice, they teaching the diving still and the interference in the crease? I don't know why I turned him into Bill Cosby.
You see?
With the interference and the jumping and the diving. And the...
They take the down the goalies to flop down on the ice.
And give up the ghosts.
Theo, if a man tells you to fall in the crease, don't fall. Wow, that's great.
That was good timing.
Is it still safe to do Cosby impressions? Can't do Spacey impressions anymore, probably.
I never could do a Spacey impression.
And that's also why you've never heard my Harvey Weinstein on this podcast. Yeah, also because I don't do one. Everybody's Harvey Weinstein, I assume, would just be Tom Cruise from Tropic Thunder, who was doing Harvey Weinstein in that movie.
Yeah.
Funny or not, Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so.
Here's my take on it.
What's your take
Not on funny, it? But funny in the sense that the effort was made to be funny.
What made the joke was that that's Tom Cruise.
The joke was that's Tom Cruise as Harvey Weinstein.
Well, no, I didn't know Harvey Weinstein.
Well, I'm a Hollywood insider, my friend. I'm in the industry.
I had no idea who Harvey Weinstein was until 2 years ago, to be perfectly honest. Actually, now that I know who he is, like, he's Miramax, right?
Yeah.
You ever notice how many fucking shitty Miramax movies there are? You ever like see a movie coming on HBO and it's like the Miramax thing comes up and you're like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. And it's like Kill Bill. Like, oh, this fucking movie.
Oh, blasphemy.
Yeah. Oh, you like Kill Bill?
I'd love it. The interesting thing about Miramax was the fact that he had Miramax and his brother, the other Weinstein... Harpo Weinstein, Bob. Or whatever the fuck his name was. Bob Weinstein, there it is.
Is it really Bob?
Yeah, oh, it is Bob, yeah.
That's my go-to for brothers.
He was the head of Dimension. Dimension was the horror one that did Scream, it did Mimic, it did all those, like, it did all those movies. So that was kind of, they ruled the 90s, my friend. 90s. Yeah, Tom Cruise, I would say funny concept, but not funny execution in Tropic Thunder.
Like, let's say that wasn't Tom Cruise playing an overweight bald guy who yells shit.
It was just
an overweight bald guy who just yelled stuff, a real overweight bald guy.
Yeah, if it was like Jeff Garlin from Curb.
Oh, well, maybe Jeff Garlin. That might have been funny to see. That would have been good.
So I think the Lightning will beat the Caps. I'm going to say in six. What do you say?
Five.
You see, here's the thing with five.
What's wrong with five?
Occasionally when you do this job, you have to put things aside for real life things.
Right.
And I have to go to a wedding for game five. Game five is the same night as a wedding I have to go to with Ruby in Chicago.
So you want four or six? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to say four or six because I'm going to feel real guilty if, like, you know, I'm at this wedding and they close it out and I'm not there. Because I feel like, yeah, I know that like you have to take time to do real life things occasionally. Mm. But at the same time, I'm clearly rooting for it to go 4-6. Like, I Caps, Lightning wins. Who gives a shit? Either one is going to be a fun team to cover in the final. The Caps will be a really great story if they make it. I just don't need it. I don't need it in five. It can't be in five.
Counterpoint. Dave's counterpoint.
Mm.
Brought to you by
SeatGeek. Zipa. Spoiler.
Say if they... So you're going to cover four, go to the wedding, come back for six.
Cover one through four,
right.
Wedding, cover six and seven if necessary.
So think about it.
Yeah.
What's the last thing you want to do the day after a wedding? Go off to work.
Oh, yeah.
If they win in five, you get to hang out to the cup final, right? Gregory.
I suppose I do.
Yeah. More sneakers time.
But I have a sense of duty.
Duty. I smell some duty.
Speaking of duty, I noticed the signs are still up here on the seventh floor.
We're on the men's room now, too.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's been some there's been male and female defecating that have gone against the rules of the building.
Sneaking by. Surprise, there isn't an intricate scanner system of badges to allow access into the bathrooms here on the seventh floor to find out how the mad shitter gets in there.
Oh, it's Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It's like Rogue Nation meets the first one.
Oh, I thought you meant that the mad shitter dangles from the ceiling from the eighth floor into the bathroom.
Well, by the way, that sign says no pooping if you're not on this floor, but I guess if you're on this floor, you can still pee on the toilet seat while you're in there. I'm just not going to name names because I don't know who did
it. Maybe you should print out your own sign.
Also, just have like the door be all these different caveats.
It's going to be like when you walk into a national park and it's just like all the signs of things you can't do there.
No smoking. No leaving big yellow goblets of pee on the goddamn bowl.
And no campfires. Now, as you do the podcast, we don't know if the Predators or the Jets are going to win Game 7.
Congratulations to the Predators on winning Game 7.
I would imagine
they
so. Two days of rest for Pekka Rene.
The 2 days thing, I think, helps the Jets.
I think the 2 days thing helps Pekka because he's like 11-3, I think, with 2 days rest.
I think mentally you lose game six when you can close it out at home. Like, you're fucked because now you're like, now I got to do this. Mm-hmm. Only do it there. You get that extra day. I think that might help. But
So my only theory about and you guys will probably know if this went this way, you know, by listening to some Friday probably. But like, my worry about the Predators is they give up the first goal and then the entire arena gets the shrinking sphincter syndrome that the Capitals fans get. Because I really feel like, much like Capitals fans have been in the past.
Oh, don't you dare put that plague on Nashville.
There's a sense of entitlement in Nashville now. There's a sense of expectation.
What?
There's a sense that we are going to win the cup.
You're like Wilbonning a lot today.
I'm not. Oh.
You're putting that.
Hold on, we'll talk about that
Nashville
in a second.
Fans?
But dude, don't you get that sense from Predators fans?
I don't know any Predators fans. I know like J.R. Lind on Twitter.
Don't you think it's their manifest destiny now to win the cup because they were the bridesmaid last year?
No, that's the Toronto that exists in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That's the Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Mitch Marner.
And look what happens in Toronto.
Yeah, but like, I don't think it's a sense of entitlement to lose in six in the final of the year before, and then the next year be the one seed in the President's Trophy winner the next year, and then think you should win the cup. Like, that's it's barely been 2 years, and you're like, don't do this.
Greg. I think at the very least they think they're going to be in the conference final.
Oh, yeah.
And then when the adversity struck in game five, that place got real quiet. Real quiet.
What are they supposed to do? Why am I doing Cosby impressions all day? I'm not meaning to do this. What are they supposed to do? Actually, that's more Adam Sandler.
Theo, throw the catfish on the ice and the bliggity blag and the fluggity flow.
fuck everyone who throws catfish on the ice.
Why is that? Now, who's turning heel now?
Because it's stupid.
It's not stupid. It's great. It's just like the octopus, except with a catfish.
That's even stupider.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
You need 16 wins now. There's no 16-legged octopus. So, catfish don't have legs. You're stealing a stupid idea from a dumb idea that was dumb to begin with. And you're getting thrown out of these games before they even start.
So you're saying that the catfish is not symbolic of anything playoff related?
It's just a fish. You can just throw a fucking ham on the ice. It's the same thing. They're just picking a goddamn sea animal because some idiots in Detroit did it like 40 years earlier.
Catfish are like a...
Here's a bunch of scallops. Pick them up, ice girl. It's so dumb. I'm sorry.
This is like the idea of throwing a cooked ham on the ice. What does it mean? I don't fucking know.
Here's a large pie. It's got 8 slices. Just like the octopus legs.
So you're saying that we need something with 16.
Just don't throw anything. Start the game. Oh, look, it's Brian Boucher and a fish. Oh, and NBC's taking Brian Boucher off of the game. They put Pierre there. Why? He hasn't watched a game of the series. Hey, we got AJ and Brian Boucher developing a rapport and learning all. Hey, let's get the horse racing handicapper guy and the junior hockey guy there. Fans want it.
Eddie, what'd you think of that play?
I got Justify at 6-2.
He's so good at it. Let him just do that forever.
Now, counterpoint, they dress up the catfish in little outfits. Like they're American girls.
They're insane people. That's not normal. It doesn't make it better. Hey, I got a dead animal here. Let's put it in human clothes. That's what Buffalo Bill was doing before he got Jodie Foster in the house.
Puts the catfish on the ice.
I don't understand told. This stuff.
I'd fish me.
But I think the fans aren't entitled. I think they're great.
Okay. If the Predators advance to face the sweet Golden Knights.
You should cover that series. Yeah, what are you doing?
Emily's got that series. Here's how it works. She's farther out west. She lives in Chicago.
Yeah, but you're Greg Wyshynski, ESPN.
Yeah, but I'm cursed with knowledge of the Capitals. They put me on the Capitals series. I wrote a really great piece because based on my having covered that team for the last decade or, you know, here and there, like, I've got all this institutional knowledge about the struggles, and I've wrote the shit of that series. I think it's a good decision to put me on that series. However, I'm not going to get Nash Vegas versus Las Vegas. And you know, granted, it's going to suck doing the Stanley Cup final without Emily because she'll be dead. 30%. It's going to be like Thanos snapping his fingers. Like 50% of the hockey writers are going to die in either Nashville or Las Vegas by the end of the series.
No, here's what you do. You cover the 5 or 6 games that Tampa and Washington play, and then when Nashville-Vegas goes Game 7, you show up and, oh, it's Nashville for Game 7, not Vegas.
Right. But either way, it's like,
hey, Greg, what's up?
You need someone there to write the sidebar.
This is a website. We don't have sidebars.
I get quotes from the other locker room that Emily's not in or what.
Do you just want to go there and drink?
No, that is just... Dude,
2 words, yeah. 4 words, Nate Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
George McPhee.
Right.
You're a Caps guy.
That's
you
right.
Go out there and mm-hmm. do the...
All right,
if the Caps win, you can go out there and set up...
Golden Knights versus Predators, who would win that series?
That's going to be Preds in 5. Sorry. Second round was really good. The third round's going to be bad because of how good the second round was. So Jets will be a good series if it happens, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Preds are going to win tonight. Preds are too deep. Same thing as the Wings. Too good, too deep. Come on. What does your heart say? Take me through your heart. What is your heartbeat saying? Is your heart being
well,
saying
well, here's the thing. I picked the Lightning
Vegas.
In the other series, even though my heart says the Caps. Because I just
heart,
feel like there's something
really?
Magical happening with the Caps this year.
Oh, really? Now it's magical.
But my head says the Lightning, and I picked the Lightning to be in the final. So I'm picking the Lightning.
So your heart is telling you Vegas and your head's telling you take the team that has 4 really good defensemen?
My heart and my head are both telling me Vegas.
What?
Against Nashville or Winnipeg.
So you didn't think Vegas was going to beat San Jose.
Right. But now I know that they're better than I thought they were.
Okay.
Like okay. you would allow for growth. You would allow for an
sure.
educational process to occur where mm-hmm. I realize the value of this team and how good they actually are
yes.
now that I saw them go
That's
through the fucking Sharks.
You see your mistakes and you say, hey,
yeah.
I'm going to learn from those.
I correct them. What's the definition of insanity? It's not picking the knights for three
years. It's dressing up a fucking catfish as a baby and throwing it on the ice. That's the definition of insanity, my friend.
A little tiny bottle that you put in the fish's mouth, like a little baby.
Like imagine like bringing that like to the airport and like someone's like, "What is this?" Like, "Oh, you have to meet somebody from Homeland Security for the next 16 hours." Like,
this is my child. I'm gonna throw it on the ice tonight in Winnipeg.
Does anybody ever cook the fish? Does anybody ever like serve it somewhere? Like,
dude, there's so much. Remember the whole thing with Batman with the ice in Detroit and how disgusting. You got octopus goop on top of snot, sweat, probably defecation, and also urine. You can't have it. It's gross. It freezes. The people trip.
Listen, I hate Gary Bettman, but he's got a point. It's weird throwing sticky seafood on the ice before hockey games. Like, I don't know.
I think it's a great tradition, but I let him go off on his little tangent here, but I find the catfish tradition to be admirable. I like the idea that the fans have created this amazing tradition, and I have no problem with the octopus one. It's great. It's super fun. I wish every city in the fucking league threw something on the ice, you know? And
what if it was less slimy?
In Philly, they throw
calzone.
Calzone.
No, Jersey could be the calzone. Philly.
Jersey would be a mob informant. They just carry him down the lower bowl and throw him on the ice.
That could be Vegas, too, probably, at this point. Everyone's trying to figure out why Vegas is so good. Maybe the mafia is like, guys want to take a dive in the...
See, you're on the right track with Vegas, but in Vegas it would be the hand of a cheater they'd throw on the ice.
Jesus. I was thinking more would be like glow sticks. That feels like a Vegas thing.
They throw Carrot Top on the ice.
It's just his box of props.
Yep. And he's like, "What? Well, what I got here? Oh, it's a sled!" And then he just like sleds off the ice. It's great.
And that, actually, yeah, in Nashville, then they should throw Martin Erod on the ice.
Well, I know how much you apparently hate people throwing shit on the ice, but remember in San Jose when they played Detroit in the playoffs, and that dude threw a shark with a baby octopus in its mouth on the ice? Like, how baller is
that? But that was like a one-off. They don't do that every time.
You're saying that you have a problem with it being a gamely a nightly tradition.
Like, not even nightly. Like, if there was, like, one...
And by that, I mean Keira Knightley, who's very light and you can throw her on the ice wherever you want.
Oh, Jack Sparrow. throw the...
Ow! Don't you know I'm the sexiest tomboy beanpole on the planet?
I was thinking about this the other day. How many movies between 1990 and 1999 featured Sandra Bullock as an unattractive woman that somebody figured out at the end of the movie was hot?
Yeah, a lot.
There's a whole cottage industry for that in the 90s.
She was the embodiment of paint-covered overalls.
Yeah. Every movie she was in was a version of She's All That.
Right, yeah.
Every movie.
Right.
Wait, so you're telling me this girl works from home and she just sits by a computer all day?
Yeah.
Ugh, nobody wants that. Right.
Oh, that was the net you're
the
doing?
The net?
Yeah.
The net
notable for being one of the few acting performances by noted humorist Dennis Miller as her best friend.
Hey, babe. You're hotter than the Hades hell of the 6th century, babe. Okay, babe.
Can you help me? Saving you right now is like taking the road to Colossus.
Well, what is this? The Spanish Inquisition, huh, babe? It's all the questions. I haven't seen this many questions since the McCarthy hearings. Okay, babe.
And then we didn't even talk about the fact that he, when what's her face, did the correspondence dinner.
His three day comeback.
He was like, I'm gonna slam her on Wednesday, babe.
I'm gonna look at you know what it was. I was
I'm
so close
to you.
I was so close to tweeting this because I thought for sure his joke was I had never heard of her, right. LOL. But then like he posted a thing later that was like, I'm gonna stop doing my research. Like, he really was doing it.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, why is everybody being woefully ignorant about him? He's not really he really was.
Yeah.
He's like, babe. What rhymes with feminism from the 13th century? Is there a word? Siri, help me out. Fucking Dennis Miller. I used to laugh at that guy so goddamn.
Oh, he was. People don't understand that before he became an unfunny Republican hack, that he was the embodiment of like.
He was the best
snark.
Weekend Update.
He was
for the
best
time
by leaps and bounds.
Go on, go to YouTube and search Dennis Miller, Norm Macdonald, and see when Norm Macdonald was a guest on his HBO show. It was fucking incredible every single time.
And the other thing about Miller was that, like, much like now it's become like commonplace with like Colin Jost doesn't really do any sketches. He's just the Weekend Update guy. But like, I remember that being a novelty that like, and before that it was like, you know, Chevy Chase was on Update, another, you know. Yeah. And when Miller did it, he wasn't really he wasn't in any sketches.
Was Jane Curran in sketches? I don't remember Jane Curran.
She was definitely in
the Coneheads. Yeah,
so it was such a novelty to have like a guy that wasn't in the other part of the show like, be the update guy. The only sketch I remember him being in was that amazing alternative ending to It's a Wonderful Life sketch they did, where they find out that Mr. Potter isn't really a cripple, and it's Carvey doing his Jimmy Stewart impression, and it's Lovitz as Mr. Potter, and Lovitz like falls out of his chair and gets on his feet, and Carvey goes, you're not even a cripple, and Lovitz goes, I can explain.
I gotta go find that.
It's an amazing sketch. It's like, it's the alternative ending to It's a Wonderful Life, and they wind up beating the shit of Mr. Potter while singing Auld Lang Syne.
Oh,
it's
man.
Great.
I miss when SNL sketches were just like whatever they thought of. It didn't have to be a topical. Somebody wrote a thing for Vice this week about how the opening, we were talking about this before the show,
yeah.
The opening, the cold opens, how they're just like shitty political jokes for like
they
7
are.
Minutes. Like, I mean, they've.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think in the last couple of weeks, the Mulaney show, the. Donald Glover show, like there's been a few where they've gotten they've done more sort of like nonsensical like sketch comedy sketches versus having to be based on anything, and I think that the show has been better for it.
But apparently someone tweeted it, but the thing where Donald Glover is like all the guys are LeBron's teammates, and they're like, if you need help with basketball, that's not for us. And they're like, if you need someone to pick up your clothes, I'll do it. And apparently that sketch didn't make it onto the show.
Yeah.
Why?
I think they do
That's
a thing where they know certain sketches are maybe built better for the web, and then they cut them so they'll go viral.
Yeah, I guess.
Is their thought.
Maybe.
That's my theory, at least.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
So I think the Knights beat the Predators.
So you're going with the Jets. Doesn't matter.
Or the Jets.
Which, yeah, wow.
And
look at you.
Golden Knights in the Cup Final.
You're rolling the dice.
Yeah. I also think that maybe the league knows it's beneficial to have the Knights in the Cup Final.
Yeah. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN reporter.
As we've noted in the fixed expansion draft.
Oh my god.
$500 million goes a long way in this league. Go ahead.
Look,
before you go there, let's talk about, you know why the Knights are good? The fucking salary cap. Fuck the Florida Panthers and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I couldn't even read that, man. I saw the screenshot of it I didn't click on the link, and I was like, no, I'm not, I don't want this. Like, there are certain things I don't want in my brain, and you know, that's why Mute is great on Twitter. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to know what he thinks about stuff.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense that the Florida Panthers would decide to jettison both Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault and protect a shitty defenseman instead.
It makes no sense.
Because now, this offseason, they're going to be looking for another scoring winger that would be like Riley Smith or Jonathan Marchessault.
Like, I get it in certain situations, but, like, you didn't have to do what they did. Like, that wasn't a requirement.
The thing about the William Karlsson thing is less an issue with me with Columbus making a bad...
Yeah.
Like,
no one
knew he was going to score at this clip.
Sure.
But if you're trading a guy that you think might have potential to get the Clarkson contract off your books, there's other ways to get that contract off your books. And I'll say this. What did the Knights see in him? What did the Knights see in him to not only... acquire him, but put him on the fucking top line with Marchessault and Smith? Clearly somebody there is doing their homework on William Karlsson in a way that the Blue Jackets didn't.
Right.
I'll say that about
it. Yeah. Oh, it's a screw up for sure. It makes Jarmo look bad because Jarmo should know him better than George McPhee does.
It's me, Jarmo.
Hello.
I need to get rid of this Clarkson contract.
So I need I want to say this about the fixed expansion draft thing, which is that Ben Wright, who was the PR guy for the Atlanta Thrashers, I had him in my story I wrote this week because I thought he'd be like great to have, because I was hoping he'd be like, fuck the Knights. My team would still exist were it not for this fixed draft. But unfortunately, he's a really reasonable guy. But he made the point, and I think it's really good. Like, we went into this thinking they'd be shitty because expansion teams traditionally should be shitty, right?
I mean, we went for all the reasons. We saw the players they took, too. Like, we thought they fucked up the...
Now,
they chose
more bullish on them than you are. I didn't go quite where you and like Barry went, where Barry's like, the Golden Knights are going to just be dog shit. But here's the thing. His point was, maybe instead of fixing the draft for the Knights, they finally fixed the draft. In the sense that, why should expansion teams be shitty? Like, why do we have this mentality that, oh, you're the next one in? Well, you need to get dog shit from our rosters and be horrible. Like, why is it that way? And B, look what the Knights have done. Like, look what they've done for that market. Look what they've done for the league. Like, the idea that a first-year team can be good is actually really good for hockey and more competitive for hockey. And yeah, maybe we should pour one out for the teams that haven't figured their shit out in 40 years, you know, that are not going to play for a cup where the Knights might play it in their first season. But, like, being a good team in their first year is a better thing for hockey.
Yeah, but they weren't supposed to be this good. This is a total accident. Everything fell into place. The division they're in for the playoffs, all of it.
Their shooting percentage is unsustainable.
All right, that's the only one I'm going to do. I'm sorry. Just had to do one.
What are we talking about again?
The Knights beating the Jets for the Predators.
Yeah, I don't see them beating. I don't see them beating the Preds for sure. I could see them beating the Jets. I just don't think they will. So, okay. But whatever. I'm going to just stick to my Preds guns and just say Preds over Vegas in five.
Knights in six. Knights in six.
Knights in...
Knights in six games.
Knights in Manhattan. Beating the Rangers. Draft picks untaken.
They'll lose to the Lightning.
I mean, if they can beat what,
and then they'll be done.
If they can beat the Preds, they can beat anybody.
Yeah, it won't be the Lightning.
So you're
like, no, my cup final was Nashville Lightning and Nashville winning.
And you're bailing on that?
No. I'm bailing on it. I'm picking the Knights.
Man, I haven't seen anybody flip flop like this since.
Since Hannah came out of the ocean and splashed.
Since the Great Wall of China was built. I don't know. Did that wall flip-flop?
But that said, it should be Washington and the Knights for all the reasons that I spelled out earlier, but it'll end up being Tampa and the Knights because we can't have good things.
As long as Nashville wins, it's a funny final for the Caps no matter what.
Like, not funny haha, but no. Like funny huh.
It definitely won't be a snore fest, that's for sure.
Speaking of snoring, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Zipa. Now, you know what Zipa is, right? It's Happy Z spelled backwards, as in you're getting your Z's because it's more than a snoring device. The patented tongue strap that's designed to eliminate snoring with two key features. Zipa is an American-made boil-and-bite mouthguard that is a game-changer in the bedroom, just like Dave Lozo. While other snoring devices have one feature, they either advance the lower jaw or stabilize the tongue, Zipa does both. There are no other snoring solutions like this in the world. Not to mention the cost is less than $100. And since Zipa custom molds to your mouth, like Dave Lozo, it's super comfortable.
You're trying to sell this or not sell it? This is not good. This probably isn't helping.
It's been cleared by the FDA as safe and effective. If you aren't happy with the product, then you can return it within 90 days for a full refund. It's no surprise that Zipa has a 5-star customer service. Has 5-star customer service and strives to maintain the highest reviews and ratings. We talked about it last time we talked about Zipa that we both have snoring dads. Mm-hmm. And snoring dads are a problem because they make everybody around them really miserable.
Yep. When I go home and sleep at the house
for whatever reason, I hear rumbling echoes of my dad snoring and it is the worst. So I will give him a Zipa.
Zipa.
To Zipa. Mikey.
Dog. Zipa help. Roe! That's his wife's name. Roe! I've been trying to think of that for 3 weeks in this room. Dog, Roe.
So try Zipa and start enjoying Happy Z's every night, just like Dave Lozo. For your sake... Oh, that's not true. He wakes up screaming, I'm guessing, every 30 minutes.
Yeah, because my nose is running all over my fucking face.
Energies. Oh, no, ragweed.
I'm exhausted after that whole Nashville rant. Sorry.
For your sake and the sake of people sleeping near you, try Zipa. Go to Zipa. Z-Y-P-P-A-H, that's Happy Z spelled backwards, .com to learn more and use our code PUCKSOUP, all one word, P-U-C-K-S-O-U-P, for free shipping. That's Zipa, Z-Y-P-P-A-H.com, code PUCKSOUP for free shipping. Stop pissing off everyone you love by your snoring and man up or woman up and get Zipa.
Speaking of pissing off everyone you love.
Yeah.
I'd like to read you some quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina Hurricane-related quotes, Craig.
Please.
This is from owner Tom...
Dun-dun.
I've come to the conclusion that strategy is pretty overrated. I don't believe the strategy differences are as important as getting the right culture and the right attitude. That's a billionaire quote from Tom... And here's one gotten by Greg Wyshynski of ESPN from new head coach Rod Brendamore.
Yeah, it's me.
Talking about working...
Talk about politics.
Brendan. And he says, well, we'll see how it goes. I come into this and I know what's going to happen. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, does he? I wonder what it's going to be. And here's what it's going to be. Tom's going to want to be involved in everything. He's going to want to be down in the coach's office every day that he's around. And here's the part that's a lie. And that's okay. We talked about it. I get this is how it's going to work. I think we'll be able to work well together. I'm just going to have to show him why we can't do what he wants to do. He wants to put a guy in and play him there, and everyone knows it's not the best decision. I got to show him why. I got to let him know
and then he's fine. Greg?
Yeah.
The moment I become a billionaire, I am a thousandaire basically now at best, and I have someone do my laundry for me. Drop the laundry off.
Yeah.
Come and get it the next day.
Right.
I'm not in there telling them how to do my laundry because I am paying that person to do my laundry.
Right.
When I become a billionaire and I own stuff, I am not going to be in the coach's office. Like, I'm picturing Tom Dundon rolling in, like, you know, he just got off his motorcycle. He's got like a jumpsuit on. He takes his hat off and he's got that like sunglass face. He's like sick. He's like drinking a soda. He's like, we got to put Tom Kunach on the top line tonight, right? And now Rod Brendamore has to waste his time fucking placating this dumbass about his lineup decisions. And here comes Greg to now tell me why Tom Dundon's a disruptor.
Remember the movie Last Action Hero where a child got to go into the movie and hang with Arnold Schwarzenegger and be an action hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Okay.
Like, who wouldn't want to do that?
It's not about what
you
want to
do. Were I a billionaire
and
were I to buy through my horrible subprime mortgage company winnings and earnings.
They are basically winnings.
An NHL team. I would do the exact same thing that Tom Dundon is doing.
And this is why you wouldn't be able to hire anybody except for ex-players. Also, this isn't a quote, but I think it was Luke DeCock. His name I just like saying.
Yeah, of the cock, yeah.
It's Luke of cock.
Luke of cock.
He wrote,
I am Sir Luke of cock.
My ancestors were killing birds all across the Carolinas.
I am the sheriff of Block.
Oh, shit. My mortal enemy.
We have put up a wall around your village. And you will never be able to get out to sea.
This is very close to that dude from Galaxy Quest that you were just doing. The aliens from Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yeah.
We need help to defeat. Luke DeCock said what?
Yeah, what were we talking
Luke
about?
Luke DeCock says what?
Dude, I'm so out of it today. The problem, you see, was in leadership because they had this guy, Justin Williams, who they signed for a couple years, and he didn't get a letter on his jersey, even though I've heard a million times, Greg, and you've heard it too. It's not about who's wearing the letters. Mm-hmm. It's about a leadership group.
Yeah, absolutely, except for every team that wins the cup has a great captain.
And apparently... Justin Williams, whose leadering leadership has been known for years.
Oh, except for Dustin Brown.
Was not being listened to because he wasn't wearing a letter. And now that he's going to be 37, I want to say, in October, he's going to get a letter probably. And now everyone's going to listen to the guy who's got 1 year left on his deal, 37 years old. That's it. That's how they solve it. A letter on Justin Williams' chest, a coach and the owner talking, and no more strategy.
The Tom Dundon whispering aside that Rod Brendamore apparently is going to do, which is going to be incredible, when you tell the guy... By the way, Don Waddell becomes the GM, Rod Brendamore becomes the coach. What do these two men have in common?
Neither of them have been to the playoffs in the last 10 years.
They're both already being paid by the team.
Yep, that's that kind of next level disruption I want for my new billionaire.
Genius. On top of having to like explain to Tom Dundon why, you know, why don't we just play both goalies? Well, we can't. Like, here it says. So
I'm paying Chad Ruedel $6 million a year. Why is he not out there playing goalie?
Why do you keep on mentioning Penguins?
Because he's going to sign all these guys who have cups for too much money. That's just going to be his thing this summer.
So on top of that, Brendamore, his job apparently is this. Like, he said in his press conference that, I think there's a winning team in that room. Everybody's like, that's weird because they've not been in the playoffs since the dawn of man. Why do you believe this? He's like, well, they just didn't have any accountability.
Accountability.
Like, why didn't they have accountability? Well, because they didn't. No one held them accountable for the things they did. Wasn't that on your coach?
Yeah, wasn't that on your coaching staff?
It's not necessarily Bill Peters' fault. And so I'm trying to crack this code here. Like, when he says that, is he basically saying that, like, Ron Francis was the guy who's like, like sipping a drink. Oh, let's just try to make the playoffs or whatever.
Yeah, of all the guys in the fucking world, it's going to be Ron Francis, yeah, who's like,
it's a very whatever. Weird deal. But like, basically, the message that they're giving out at this press conference this week is like, we got players that can win. They just need to get a kick in the pants from Rod Brind'Amour.
See, like, I kind of agree with that assessment that they have good enough players to make the playoffs. But the problems weren't Justin Williams' uniform. The problems weren't.
But, like, here's the thing. I agree with the idea that a team should never settle for let's try to make the playoffs as the goal. The goal should always be let's win a championship. But don't you accomplish that by bringing in someone who's done it, not as a player but as a coach? Like, to me, that's kind of like the thing. If the message to the players, like, if you bring in Peter Laviolette and he's like, look, boys, enough of this horse shit trying to make the playoffs. I have a fucking cup ring. We're going to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that guy, I'm following that guy into the battlefield. But if it's like Rod Brind'Amour, he's like, I played, you know, 12 years ago on this very team, and we won a cup, me and a bunch of other guys that are significantly better than you are, and it was when Cam Ward was good, and we're going to totally win a cup here, and you guys are going to follow me. They're like, why, are you taking face-offs? No, I'm fucking retired. All right, sure, you'll know what you're doing, I guess.
That's the best way to change the culture I've always found is to have a bunch of guys who've already been there and then get rid of the strategy. The strategy was what was hurting. What was the biggest problem with the team, Tom? What would you say? Strategy. We were thinking too much out there.
I kind of understand, though, if I'm doing Dundon speak.
Dundon.
It's that he's saying that you don't have to hire a Guy Boucher. Like, you can get a guy, like, it's actually a classic hockey trope, if you think about it. Remember when the Devils would try to, like, hire Tom McVie or somebody, here's a great example. When the Mets hired Dallas Green, like, they bring in the shit kicker because they really believe the players that they have on the roster are good.
Yeah.
They just need some guy to go in there and be, like, you know, a drill sergeant about it. And I guess that's maybe what he thinks Brind'Amour is. Brind'Amour is nobody's strategist. He's not going to be a guy who's going to, like, lay out and diagram shit and it's, like, Corsi and whatever. He's going to be a guy that screams and yells and puts baby in a corner if he doesn't, you know, perform well, and that's kind of be what it is, and they believe that that's what the team needs.
And I do agree that, like, Vegas is a great example. Like, you can just throw some shit together and be good for a year. Like, the Carolina Hurricanes aren't, like, fucked or anything, mm-hmm. but, like, I just wouldn't necessarily be enthused if I was a Hurricanes fan. But
I'm willing to I'm willing to give these guys all the rope that they need to prove that it's not going to work.
Yeah, you bought your car through a Tom Dundon loan, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely, man. It's so cheap, too. I mean, yeah, it ruined that family's life, but, I mean, I got what I needed. I think it's fine that they did this. I'm willing to give it a shot. Am I a little bit concerned that a guy who, like you mentioned, said he was going to disrupt the process and think outside the box, and there's a lot of guys out there who have never gotten a shot at this shit, and I'm going to give him a shot. Hired Don Waddell as his GM. Yes, yeah. That is bothersome. Until you realize, and I think that we can take draw a through line from Rod Brind'Amour's comments through Don Waddell to Tom Dundon, all of the people that are now working for this organization are advisors.
I have no other options.
No,
oh.
They are advisors to Tom Dundon, who is a de facto coach, a de facto GM, and the owner of the team. Like, when you think of Rick Dudley and Don Waddell, do you think of, like, the power, like, these guys are, like, running shop? No, they're there in the same capacity that Rod Brind'Amour is, which is to advise and consent the things that Tom Dundon wants to do. You literally just had the coach tell me in an interview this week on ESPN that his job is to listen to what Tom Dundon wants to do with the lineup and be like, I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea.
So,
like,
how does that help accountability, though, if you know your coach and GM aren't being held accountable?
Oh, he's just making shit up. Like he's got to come up with some reason why it's going to be different. But, like, literally everybody in that organization that's been hired is now an advisor to the guy running the show.
Because no one else, because Peter Laviolette will never go there. A guy like that will never go to a
But I don't
like
think the plan was ever to get Peter Laviolette or to get Barry Trotz or to get anybody of note. It's to get people that are advisors to Tom Dundon.
Man.
Tom Dundon doesn't want another personality there to run the show, to be the face. It's his team. I guarantee you he's going to be at the draft table. And it's going to be like,
that's fine.
You know, for an owner?
To hang out there. He shouldn't be like, you know who I think is good as this K Leaflet from the WHL. We should draft him. He's got 24 goals. Like, that's no. But if he wants to hang out and be listened to, that's fine. But, like, coaching the team from the press box or the owner's box, like, that's insane.
What's this guy's name? Kesley? Yeah, they're all named Kesley now in junior hockey, sir.
KJ Jaden Caden? You gotta get that guy. He's got a cool name.
Why should we draft this guy? He grew up in Texas. Okay, but he's number 5,000 on our draft board, sir.
I thought of a good game to play at the live show if and when we ever get set up in Dallas. I don't want to spoil it.
But. Okay, yeah, I had one too, but as it's probably better. It could be the same game.
Mine's like the game we played in Philly with John Cryer or whatever. It was like one of those three things. Yeah. I think it could be pretty good.
I like it.
What else we got?
We got, before we get to the question of the week, first off, let's go back to Marchand because we didn't talk about this. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that he is truthful when he says he's going to change his ways after Licking Gate? And by Licking Gate, I mean the gate on Ryan Callahan's face.
No.
There's one thing he said.
It's easy to do, though. Like, he should be able to do it, but I don't think he cared.
There's one thing he said that struck me, though. Because, like, I do think at the end of the day, it's always bothered him that he's seen as a troll and an agitator. He's seen as, like, Sean Avery, basically, without getting the credit of being a high-end talent. And that's why I think the playing with Sid and Bergeron in the World Cup was a huge thing for him, because people finally saw, oh, shit, this guy can hang with top-end talent. And he scored a fuck ton of goals in the last 3 years. But when he talked about the idea that he will never be seen as a leader in the same way that Bergeron and Chara and Backes are, because of the things he does, like licking the faces of people.
Yeah, he's way too far on the road for that to ever be a thing.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, he's like south of 30. He's getting up there.
He's like 28.
He's like 20. I think he turns like 29 like next week or something. But when he said that, I'm like, oh, you know what? This guy kind of understands that the peak of his career is arriving on the horizon. And at some point, you have to kind of like become something else. And maybe it's just projection on my part, because when I started in 2008, I was making dick jokes. And now I'm actually doing some journalism and TV shit.
But dick jokes are fine. It's just... you shouldn't need to be 29 years old to figure out you shouldn't lick people. Like, if
no, I understand that, but I think he's talking about the totality of the shit he does. Like, no one is respecting, no one's putting a fucking C on this guy's jersey if he's getting suspended for licking another guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think in that moment, there was a little bit of truth and honesty of self-evaluation that, like, you know what? I got this far because of this shit, but now I'm here, and if I want to become something else... I can't do this anymore. And I thought that was truthful. I thought we saw a little window into the soul of Brad Marchand, assuming there is one.
Let's make a bet.
All right. That sounds like a bet.
At some point next season, he will do something like – he won't lick anybody, but he'll do something like it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is. We'll know when we see it. Like, he'll like honk someone's
it's
nose.
Like, it's like art. You'll know.
Right. You'll just know when you see it. I don't know what it's going to be. Like, I'm not talking like knee hits or low bridges or stuff like that. He'll do some weird, wacky, goofy thing. Okay.
So like he puts his finger up someone's butt.
See, I thought about that, but there's too much padding. You get the glove on your hand. You got to take it off, reach down in there, you know.
Someone would definitely notice.
Yeah, it would take too long for it to develop. He'd have to sneak up behind the pile. And
Doc, in any of the replay shows, he put his finger up his bunghole.
Why is he doing Game 7? I don't understand.
Because they think he's the best at what he does.
So why is Eddie going? If they thought he was the best at what he does, they wouldn't leave him on the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the
Belmont.
Because
he's also really good at horse racing, and I'm sure he's written into his contract he gets to go do horse racing.
He can phone in the picks. He won his – he hit his – no, you know what is annoying about his picks?
He hit the trifecta,
I think,
right?
He hit the exacta.
Okay,
he picked three horses, he said, box these. And the three of the four favorites. Like, all right. Good.
Steve Wino won some money on that by playing Eddie O's horses. Yeah.
Oh, we forgot to talk about is we meant to talk about it like 2 weeks ago. The whole players not talking to the media thing.
Yeah, I had that written down. I was going to go to that next. So Phil Kessel didn't speak after any games, and then he didn't speak on breakdown day for the Penguins, leaving his coach and general manager to dance around questions as to whether or not he was healthy. And this is actually something we wanted to talk about a few weeks ago, because Steve Dangle wrote a column on Sportsnet where he wrote, outrage over a player not talking to the media after a game is more dependable than the weather. And then he turned his hat sideways and said, yeah, the weather. It's popped up a few times recently. Auston Matthews not talking after the Toronto Maple Leafs lost game 4 to the Boston Bruins. Radko Gudas didn't speak after the Philadelphia Flyers were eliminated by the Pittsburgh Penguins. There are two main schools of thought. Not talking after a loss shows a lack of accountability. And number two, who cares? I'm curious to know which you subscribe to, but first allow me to explain why I'm on team Who Cares. And he goes on, and you can find the article on Sportsnet about it. So, I mean, obviously, as a reporter, I'm never going to be on team Who Cares in most cases.
I think this is a thing fans don't give a shit about. I think fans care more about your Marriott points and your airport travel than they do about, like, because they could go back to the Backstrom thing. You were like, Backstrom said, fuck this league. And there were more people mad about you reporting on him saying that than there were like, oh, that was great to hear. Because they don't want to hear. They don't care. I don't think they care.
I think they care.
That's my feeling.
Because I always think that there's a moment where that fans want to understand why something happened or why something didn't happen. And they're curious about it. And you never hear a fan being like, well, yeah, thanks for asking that question. Or, yeah, you know, great, great, great getting that information. They just assume that it's just there for their consumption. But when we bitch about, like, Phil Kessel not addressing the fact that he had an atrocious series against the Capitals, the pushback comes from two different places. It comes from the Phil camp, which is the people that love Phil and are like, Phil's unimpeachable and don't treat our sweet boy wrongly. And then it comes from the other camp that says,
it's on.
Phil won two cups. Like, why does he have to answer your question? Well, it's because we're curious. And I'm sure there are other people out there that are curious as to why he was absolutely invisible in that series.
So Chris Mueller, the Pittsburgh radio guy, put up a poll today. It has exactly 999 votes as the time I read this. It says, as fans, do you think Phil Kessel should have spoken to the media yesterday? Yes or no? What percentage do you think yes and no has?
No, 85, yes, 15.
Nah, 62, 38, no.
Okay, that's closer than I thought it would be.
I think it's one of those things that most fans don't care about. Partly because I think they know, like, he's not going to say anything. Like, that's just how players are.
Will he, though?
I would like to have known about his injuries. Like, the Penguins, like, Mike Sullivan being like, yeah, we had some bumps and bruises. Like, fuck you. Who was fucking hurt? We've been waiting around for a month for this. Like, who's fucking hurt? Tell me who's hurt. But, like, I don't care if Phil Kessel's like, I could have played better.
I think the thing that fans don't understand about this equation is that, like, they always assume it's the TV questions. That when we're, like, upset about a guy not talking after a game, that it's because, you know, oh, what? You're upset that he didn't tell you how it felt to score the goal? Or he didn't tell you whether this momentum can carry over to the next game?
Momentum.
And I'm like, no, I don't give a shit about that. That's why I don't ask a question for the first 3 minutes to let these fucking idiots from the local TV station ask all the shit questions that they just need to get sound on.
That crowd get you fired up out there before the game, Sid?
Talk about what it meant to score the goal that you scored in the game that we watched.
What was the energy like out there?
Yeah, those fucking idiots get their shit, and then they walk away, and then we come in to do the real journalism. And it's at that point where, you know, either you really care about it or you don't. But if you do care about it, it's because you know that we will ask a question that maybe gets insight into something that you might care about, gives us an angle that we can explore maybe that night or later on. Or in some cases, they say something really interesting. Maybe it's about Tom Wilson's hit. Maybe it's about their coach and their usage. Well, like, I think the biggest disconnect between reporters and fans is that they assume that we all know the answers to the questions that we're asking. And that is horseshit.
But that, in this case, I can see that being the case, because what's Phil going to say after they get eliminated, you know?
We don't know.
But I think it's one thing where a guy who gets hit by Tom Wilson isn't available after a game. It's one thing where a guy isn't available after his team's been eliminated.
If I had one question for Kessel, It would be this. Why is your sister a better player than you? No, it would be this. It would be, do you think that your game would have improved had Mike Sullivan put you back with Malkin like you were in the first round?
He'd never answer it.
How do you know?
Because
you say that and everybody else says that. And everybody else will say that about any question that's asked, but no one knows for sure. That's why you ask the questions.
But that's why he's not there, is because he doesn't want to answer that question.
Maybe.
It's on. Yeah. Have you seen that commercial?
Yeah.
It's on. I keep trying to isolate it with audio. I can't get it right.
I get it. Like,
it's on.
Listen, most answers are going to be shit. Most questions are going to be shit. But in some cases, you ask a question and you don't know beforehand what the answer is going to be. And that's why you ask the question. That's why having availability is good. And listen, I understand in having done this job for a long time that it's okay if someone is super fucking fired up and doesn't want to talk after a game, and they want, but as long as they're there the next day, that's okay for me now. It took me a while to get through that because I obviously want the big juicy anger quote.
Got to get that quote up at 11:45 at night after the game.
But to not be available like at all, after the series that Phil had, is not cool. It's just not cool. Like, we write about you in glowing ways. We nominate you for awards and shit.
That shouldn't matter.
Yeah, it totally matters. And so...
Or are you only writing those?
But maybe he didn't talk because he didn't win the con either year. That's probably what it is.
That's not our fault.
Yeah.
I'm not Canadian.
But, like we write about you in the good times.
Good
times. And you got to talk to us in the bad times. It's kind of how it works. Mm. You know? That's just me. I get it. All right, let's do the mailbag.
I just also, too...
Our question of the week, rather.
We glossed over this. I don't think we ever talked about this. Like, Wayne Simmons apparently got hurt in, like, November. Yeah. Played, like, 60 games with, like, a broken, like, spine or something. Like, a really bad injury. And was like, well, I don't want to let the team down. Like, buddy, miss 2 months in the regular season to have surgery. Yeah. So you're healthy in the playoffs. This whole, like, you know, battling through shit is insane if it's going to cost you. Like, Wayne Simmons at 50% is not going to win you a playoff series. So if you're going to be hurt in April... Fix the shit in November or December. What are you doing?
The most amazing thing is like the Bruins put out the injury reports for the Bergeron line. I'm just like, what happens when they're healthy?
I know.
Like, holy shit.
Good God, man. But like when a series is over, if you're telling me what would I rather have? Like Phil Kessel on locker cleanout day or Mike Sullivan telling me all the injuries. I want the injuries. I want to know how bad things were and how much that played into, we don't want to make excuses. I'm not telling you to. Just tell me who was hurt. Tell me who had what. That's it. That's
but again, it. All I say is that please understand that like the shit questions that you think we're going to ask, they're going to be asked in the first 2 minutes, and then we do the real questions.
Why can't local TV people just let like people who are going to ask questions ask questions? Like you're going to get the soundbite either way.
They all have to get out of the way so we can actually get in there because they create a. A Helm's Deep Lord of the Rings wall of cameras that we can't get through, and then they leave, and then we can get through. Real before we get to the question of the week, which is about the Capitals and if they're going to do the damn thing this time, let's touch on that Wilbon thing. Wilbon called Washington a minor league city,
Minor league sports,
Dan Steinberg found a column from Wilbon from 1990 in which he said, you know, the expectation shouldn't be winning the Stanley Cup. We should be happy they made the second round. And I'm just like, oh, man, it all comes back around again, doesn't it?
That's JP.
Yeah.
By the way, watching Japers Rink on Twitter, like, slowly break down psychologically every year in the playoffs is the best part of the Caps thing. Like, hey, guys, going into this game, if we lose the next two and don't make it, hey, we could still have fun before this, right?
He was, like, in Haiti for part of the playoffs, and I DM'd him, like, how are you doing? He's just like, I'm fine. And then, like, on Twitter, it's like, you know, we could all jump off the top of the arena together. Or we could just realize that, hey, games are played and wins are losses and losses are wins. And
like, then, like, as like they got closer and closer, he was like, come on, fellas, let's do this. Like, oh, my God, he's actually become that person on Twitter where he's just like, come on, be strong. We can do this.
We can do it.
But Wilbon, first of all, I just want to say that I think it is funny that the Caps put out a 5-minute celebration video about getting past the second round.
Hey,
it's funny. It's funny.
Guaranteed laugh from me every time somebody makes the Capitals banner joke. Yeah. After they put up that fucking Winter Classic Champions banner at their practice rink.
Attendance banners, whatever they got in that arena. Like the 5-minute video for getting halfway to the cup is fucking funny. But that doesn't mean here's why Washington's the best sports town is because it's the sports town that's honest with itself.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, this is fucking great. We got out of the second round. Let's party. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. Someone asked me on the radio, they're like, so is it a success if the Capitals don't win the cup? I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? Yes, of course it's a success. They're playing for a championship for the first time in 20 years.
It's just, like, don't get me wrong. Like it's still, I still think it's weird when, like, they lose to Tampa and they're going to be like, hey, we still had a blast. Like, you should still be sad about it. Yeah. But, like.
But by the way, if you ask a Capitals fan, the biggest task in the last 10 years is not winning the cup. It's getting past Pittsburgh.
That's all they've done the last 10
Print
years.
Up this the t-shirts.
I know.
I don't give a shit. Be happy about it. Be thrilled. Remember that Dan Steinberg column we talked about a couple of like, I think last year about like, hey, enjoy the ride, Capitals fans. You know, why allow yourself to enjoy the regular season? I hated that column. But if you made the same argument now about, you know what, no matter what happens in this series against
this is
Tampa,
different.
Love it. Right. And I'm like, absolutely.
You're playing it around you haven't seen in your adult life, probably. That's this, different than like winning the President's Trophy and losing five or losing in the second round of five games.
This is
horrible.
Icing on the cake, and on top of the icing, there's whipped cream, and on top of the whipped cream, there are sprinkles, and on top of the sprinkles, there's a cherry. It's all there for you because you've done the thing. You did the damn thing already. But here's the question.
And next to the sundae is a nurse helping Nick Backstrom eat it because he can't lift it with his one hand.
He's got another hand.
He's got to use that one to... yeah, you're right.
Here's the question of the week is, are they going to do the damn thing? Garnet wants to know, here's the real question. What would be worse, getting swept or losing in Game 7? The answer for both the semis and the finals. Getting swept would be better than losing in the Game 7 because getting swept means that you expended all of your energy to beat your arch rival and it's understandable if you get swept.
That's sadder than losing in 7 because like at least you tried in the third round.
Yeah.
I think like what's the worst way they could lose? Like what's the most Caps way for them to go out?
Losing in Game 7.
To Tampa?
Yeah. Don't you think?
I feel like it would have to involve the Stanley Cup final with like the Jets with the Preds. Like it has to be like Forsberg scoring four goals in Game 7.
Oh, you
like
mean Fleury. The worst way the Capitals could go out?
Like their season
is they get swept in the final and Fleury has four shutouts.
They need to go up 3-0 in the Cup final against Vegas and then have Fleury win the last four.
How great is it? Like a part of me wants to pick the Capitals only because of the way it's like the final round could be against their former GM and the last guy they've yet to beat from the Penguins in Fleury. God damn, it's perfect.
Or Matthew Perreault.
It's so perfect.
Matthew Perreault revenge series.
Matthew writes, and I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind if they did, but I don't think so. Jeff McMullen, no, not a chance. They'll be taken out by Tampa in six games. Corey says, no, they're going to lose in double overtime in a Game 7 on a goalie interference review. Mm-hmm.
Boy, losing on one of those would be terrible.
Doc says, I just got dumber by reading this. Come on, man.
Good one, Doc.
They're going to get shocked out of the playoffs, maybe in four games. Our good friend Aunt Chalupa, who I'll probably see down in Tampa, says,
Aunt Chalupa.
As a Lightning fan, I will kindly ask you to bite your goddamn tongue. Don't you dare put that bad juju into this universe. So help me God, I will call a relative and have them put a Mexican curse on the Caps. What is a Mexican curse?
Is that worse than like a different ethnicity's curse?
I feel like I get that half the time I go to Taco Bell.
But I'm bumped.
And I run to the 7th floor bathroom and I make a big poo and they put up signs. You don't belong here.
Are there poop wars in the building? Like do 7th floor people go down to the 6th floor and like take a dump on the 6th floor?
Oh, you think it's become like a shit prank war?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, They set screens and like distract security so they can just like destroy the 6th floor.
Hey, where were you guys? Well, we spent 3 hours this morning all eating asparagus. And then we all simultaneously pissed in the 6th floor bathroom.
Roger, come in, please. Where are you right now? What's your 6? I'm in the vents above the 6th floor toilet. Ready to descend. Over.
Matt writes in, they got LeBron who's going... they got LeBron who's going legend every night, destroying everyone right now. Oh, it says the Caps, not the Cavs. Of course they aren't. It's a basketball joke.
Oh, it was like a V instead of the P is the joke.
Rogue Run writes in, the Caps winning is a wish my heart makes. My brain refuses to believe in this nonsense anymore. I deep sigh like Lozo when this thought enters my cranium.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced the NHL will somehow find a way to still give Crosby another cup retroactively.
Again, the NHL is, we all agree the NHL is an incompetently run organization, yet they're also genius enough to pull off conspiracies involving referees and multiple teams.
David Daniel Harshaw writes in, no, getting to the third is just to inflict the maximum emotional carnage. Garrett McCulloch writes in, oh God, no, they focused all their energy and emotions on beating Pittsburgh. Now they'll lose in five to Tampa, and Pens fans will have to hear about that one time the Caps beat them in the playoffs for all eternity. Cool, that's kind of accurate.
Yeah, but like there's no like if like okay, how about this?
Mm-hmm.
This year's AFC title game, Jets beat the Patriots, Jets losing the Super Bowl to whoever.
Mm.
Can you still talk shit to the Patriots?
No.
Right. So you can't really talk
for a Jets fan, it's the Super Bowl. It's not about the Patriots. Oh. It's never going to be about the Patriots.
Oh.
Oh, I don't give a shit.
Come on. Bill, Curtis Martin, all these guys.
It's a Met Yankees dynamic in the sense that no matter what the Jets do to the Patriots, it's not as if they're going to ever climb back and clap back on them. Come on. Like, it's nonsensical. It's the same thing with the Caps and Penguins fan in theory. Like, they have three cups. They beat you every time they won a cup in the Sid era. They're now 9-11 against the Capitals in playoff series in their history.
I forgot about the first one, actually.
Yeah, that was the double hat trick series.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, in theory, the Capitals don't really have bragging rights, although they do right now.
By the way, Pittsburgh as a city, that reaction to losing that series was insane. Like,
yeah.
Like,
you and Snay were going to put fries in this series and forget about it.
Hey, what's going on? First time, long time. Can we trade Chris Letang?
No, you can't trade Chris Letang. He's on my show all the time. Here's Candlebox.
Oh my God. So I was saying this the other day. So everyone knows Britt McHenry is just a fucking idiot.
Nut job, yeah.
She tweeted a thing that was like, you guys cheated. My Caps are going to win the next game. And of all the people I've ever seen dunk on her, and everyone dunks on her.
Yeah.
Mark Madden quote tweets her and goes, who are you covering the game for? Mark Madden did a double pump reverse dunk on Britt McHenry. Everyone dunk. Britt McHenry is a spray tan 6-foot rim. People just go up to her. Boom. Send it in. But yeah, I got to give him credit because that was the fucking just a nice little quote tweet.
Also, how much money do you make compared to me? Also, I'll be at Smithfield Ford this weekend. 6-9.
Oh, nice.
All right. That's Buck Soup for this week. A ramshackle edition with a sleepy Greg and a allergy-riddled Lozo, who luckily did up the energy enough to bemoan the fact that Nashville fans throw dead animals on the ice.
There's so many of them, too. It's not like it just won. They just didn't win a game. It was like the mascot, whatever, fine.
It's just like a school of fish.
And when they do it on the road, fuck off. It's not your building. Sneaking into fucking Pittsburgh with your goddamn fucking... All right, let's stop the show. We gotta do stuff.
He used Axe body spray to cover up the smell of the fish. Remember that?
Oh, the guy who did it in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Is he the guy that's been on like ESPN Outside the Lines? He's the same guy?
And on our show as well.
This is all your fault.
He's the catfish guy.
You did this.
There you go. It used to be Neve was the catfish guy on MTV, but on Catfish, but now it's a new catfish guy.
These are Nice.
Eric Nice. Eric Nice was the grind guy.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's me, Eric Nice. Going to throw some catfish out here in the pool in spring break. Woo-hoo!
I used to see Eric Nice on the grind, and he would be shirtless wearing pants, and he'd have like a 25-pack. And I was like, I'll never look like that.
Yeah.
Genetically, we could never look like that.
I saw a guy walking his dog in Hoboken yesterday doing that. He had a pair of like shorts on and like no shirt. I'm like, this isn't Venice Beach, buddy.
Yeah.
Put a shirt on. But he did have a pretty sick bod, so I know. Well,
then it's loud. All right. You can find me at Wyshynski on Twitter. You can read my stuff at ESPN.com. Thanks for everybody who does. Hey, live show announcement coming soon. We're down to two different venues. We're going to figure it out. Yeah. Promises. It's probably going to be Thursday, despite what everybody wants. I'm going to guess.
But not everybody wants it. It's like right down the middle.
Yeah, no.
I wish there was one way or the other. They were just over. Actually, Twitter would have been like, Friday, do it Friday. No.
Friday works for me.
But Thursday or Saturday.
It's probably going to be Thursday, I imagine. And then, you know, there you go. All right. Thanks, everybody. You got anything you want to tell people?
I'm going to go pee, and then we're going to do the mailbag.
All right. Mailbag coming up. Also, bonus episode coming up as well. And we love you guys. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense. Box soup.